The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Professor Paul Moyna, Professor of Immunology at Maynooth University, what do you make of delays of 2 to 3 days before people can actually book a PCR test?
Yeah, it's not very good, Matt. Obviously, the scale of testing we're doing at the moment is very, very high. But a delay of 2 to 3 days is very significant. So if somebody, especially symptomatic, obviously, if they're looking for a test, 2 or 3 days, that period of time, obviously, if positive, and if infected, they're going to be very infectious at that stage. So really important that that's done as quickly as possible.
Paul, I can also imagine that if you were to ring in sick to work, the employer is going to say, have you had a PCR test? No, I haven't had a PCR test. They'd be saying, have a PCR test so you can prove to us that you're sick.
Yeah, and it puts those people in very awkward positions. Earlier on, a number of months ago, I think in the ECDC had suggested that if the capacity of PCR had been exceeded, then, for example, rapid antigen tests could be used. Now, I know the CMO has been very clear in terms of those who are symptomatic should go and look for PCR tests, which is really good advice. But in a situation where if the capacity of the PCR is exceeded, under those circumstances, even I think antigen testing would be better than no PCR at all. So I think we need to use everything that we have at our disposal.
And as a professor of immunology, are you surprised or worried by the fact that it seems to then people going for tests, about 1 in 5 seems to be coming in positive?
I think it's just at this time of year, first of all, the virus transmits really well at this time of year. These are respiratory viruses. So I think the positivity rate is around 15% now at the moment. Now, a lot of people are presenting for testing because we're at that stage of the year where people are getting those symptoms that are typically associated not just with COVID, but with various other infections, respiratory viral infections. So it's not a surprise that a lot of people are presenting with symptoms, but it does indicate in terms of the very high levels of transmission. We're probably only picking up a fraction of the cases, the positive cases at the moment.
And what danger could that provide then if we have lots of people undiagnosed continuing to go about their daily business?
Well, again, Matt, they're obviously going to spread the infection, so it's really important to try to identify those confirmed cases and that those people should then isolate, whereas people who are going around positive and if with high viral loads have the potential to infect others and transmit, and it would just add to the existing problem.
So what do you make of the fact that the HSE in particular, or should I say the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Holohan, it seems to be so insistent, only use the antigen testing if you're not showing symptoms. If you're showing symptoms, you must get a PCR, and then we find the PCR isn't necessarily available. You're saying use the antigen tests, even though the Chief Medical Officer doesn't seem to want people showing symptoms to do so.
I just found the messaging, to be honest, Matt, I found the messaging over the last number of months to be really, really inconsistent. A number of months ago, we were told not to use the antigen test because they weren't very good at picking up infections in asymptomatics. Now we're being told to only use them in asymptomatics, not to use them in symptomatics. Now, I can understand the second part in terms of if you've got symptoms, you want a clinical diagnosis. Clinical diagnosis is provided by PCR, whereas the rapid antigen test is used more for a screening. But under circumstances where the capacity of our PCR has been exceeded, we have to use whatever else is available. And rapid antigen tests are really good. If you're positive with rapid antigen tests, the specificity of these are extremely high, that if you're positive with them, there's a very high probability that you have the virus and that you have COVID-19. So in situations, definitely if the capacity is and there is spare capacity, by all means, absolutely, if symptomatic, you should get a PCR. And then with the rapid antigen test, if positive, get that confirmed by PCR. But we're under situations here where the capacity of the PCR has been exceeded, so we're letting people go around for 2 or 3 days. Now, obviously, we'd be advising them to isolate, but we've no way of testing them, whereas we have the rapid antigen test that will at least pick up a lot, the majority of 80-90% of people who are infectious. And that's the important point in terms of informing those people with respect to if they should be isolating or not.
Okay, I want to bring in Dara Loughlin, General Secretary of the Irish Pharmacy Union. Could your members administer PCR tests, or is that too difficult?
PCR tests require laboratory analysis, so pharmacies wouldn't be in a position to do that. There are some pharmacies that are collecting samples for private PCR labs, but they're not doing analysis there in the pharmacy.
Okay. Now, what's the situation with antigen testing? Because there are lots of listeners complaining, firstly, about the government not putting a subsidy in place, but secondly, they're complaining about the extraordinary prices that they're being charged in pharmacies and supermarkets. Why are antigen tests at 7.50 and 10 euro a pop, so expensive?
Well, the prices being charged are unfortunately the prices of the antigen tests, and they do vary between sort of 5 euros and 8 euros per test, with occasional tests being more expensive, and that's a function of the market. As to why the government hasn't provided free tests or subsidised tests, that's a question that's been battled about for a couple of weeks, and we keep expecting an announcement. And actually, we've had preliminary discussions with the HSE and the Department of Health once or twice in advance of government decisions, so that we could be ready to implement whatever plan the government would come up with, or whatever model they might choose to use. But as we see in today's media, government still hasn't reached any firm decisions on whether they should be free, whether they should be subsidised, whether that should be through pharmacies, whether it should be through all retailers, how much the subsidy should be, and so on. And until we get answers from government in terms of what it is that they want us to do, nobody, not pharmacies, not the HSE, is in a position to actually implement the scheme.
And of course, in addition to that, you also were involved, albeit perhaps not as much as people might have expected, in the administration of the vaccines. Have you found out yet from government where you're going to be for what's been called by some people the booster shot, others the third shot?
Yes, we know we're involved in that. And ironically, the third shot and the booster shot refer to slightly different things. But we are involved. The third shot is for people who are immunocompromised and for whom it has now been established that two shots alone doesn't actually give sufficient immunity. The booster shot is now available to anybody aged 50 or over, or anybody with an underlying condition. So they can make an appointment with the HSE or wait for a HSE appointment, or call into any participating pharmacy and make an appointment to have that done in the pharmacy.
OK, so just go through again. Who at present can get a third shot?
The booster shot is now available. The minister actually signed regulations just last week, published today, to make it available to people aged 50 and older, or anybody with an underlying condition that puts them at high risk or very high risk of COVID. So those would be what were called the cohort 4 and cohort 7 patients during the original booster or the original vaccination campaign. And anybody now who's over 50 or who has a serious underlying condition and who has already had 5 months since their second vaccine is eligible for a booster shot.
Yeah, will they be called or can they just walk in and get it?
They can contact a pharmacy and make an appointment just to go in and get it, or they can wait and get an appointment in a vaccination centre. And the vaccination centres are working their way through the list as well. But if people want to contact a participating pharmacy and make an appointment, that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Okay.
There are some GPs administering the booster shots as well. The GPs have given the booster to pretty much everybody aged over 80, and almost all the over 70s have had their booster shot now. So at the moment, we're focusing on people in their 60s and healthcare workers.
I want to go back to you on that, Paul Moynagh, because if you can now walk in and get it, there are listeners who want to know, well, do I need to if I am still, if it's been less than 5 months since I got my second shot? And there are others, many people, and I would fall into this category, who fully vaccinated still got COVID in recent months. Do we need a booster shot, or should we be waiting another few months before getting the booster shot because of the existence of antibodies from the COVID illness we've had?
Yeah, typically, Matt, when you're vaccinated or infected, your body will produce antibodies. Those antibodies will be in your bloodstream, but they tend to only stay in your bloodstream for maybe 4 or 5 months, and that's when we begin to see immunity waning. When those antibodies drop, you become more susceptible to infection. You still have another type of immunity, immunological memory, that kicks in, and then you have cells in the bone marrow that will start producing more antibody, and that will clear the virus more efficiently, and that's why it stops the virus from getting down into your lower respiratory system and protects us from serious illness. So in terms of the booster, I think what's being proposed at the moment, targeting, especially in terms of those risk factors, which is primarily age, it makes sense in terms of targeting them. So I think that makes sense. The protection that you get, even from infection, that lasts for a number of months post-second vaccination. So it makes sense to wait for that about 5 month period before you go for the booster.
OK, I want to bring in another guest. Sarah Lennon is from Sage Advocacy. Thank you very much for joining us, Sarah. Of course, we a lot of concern about elderly people, those in nursing homes, maybe those living at home, receiving guests. What is the advice in relation to those people at present?
Yeah, and I think just to mention briefly as well, there's a cohort stage advocacy trying to find information about who can't leave their home for whatever reason in terms of getting their booster vaccine. So I know previously with the vaccine rollout, the National Ambulance Service played a role, but that doesn't seem to be in place this time around. So we've been trying to figure out what exactly would be available to them in terms of the booster shot. In terms of the nursing home visitors, new guidelines which came into effect just over a week ago required vaccine passports or the green cert for visitors. That was a new introduction that hadn't been in place up to now. I think a lot of people maybe thought that it was in place, but that was just introduced in the most recent set of guidelines from the HPSC.
Okay, and then what about people at home who might be in the home, and not just those who can't get out to get their next shot? I mean, how anxious should they, will they be about admitting visitors?
Yeah, I think what we've seen all along is that when there's high levels of the disease in the community, the numbers both in nursing homes and in private homes go up. So I suppose what we would say is that when someone's living in their own home in the community, it's obviously their choice who they let in and don't let in. And that applies to their own family, to visitors, to home carers, maybe, for example. In a nursing home environment, it's slightly different because of the congregated living environment. But the guidelines do say that visits should take place in the resident's own room and that visitors should be fully masked when in any kind of communal area as well. And obviously then there's the requirement for the vaccine certificate. And we have seen some nursing homes asking people who are unvaccinated and indeed even people who are vaccinated to take antigen tests as well, which doesn't currently fall within the guidelines at all.
Okay, Sarah Lennon of Sage Advocacy, thank you for joining us. Very briefly, I want to go back to finish your due, Professor Paul Moynagh, because what Sarah has been explaining to us there is a form of restrictions. I mean, what do you reckon the likelihood is that to deal with the current surge in numbers and particularly the impact that that's having on our hospital system, that there's going to have to be further restrictions implemented, even if short of the previous lockdowns?
Yeah, I'm not convinced if additional restrictions and even some of the ones mentioned last week, I sort of think it's tinkering around the edges, Matt, really, in terms of they being effective. I think the vaccines are probably doing as good a job as they can. Even the level of transmission is really so high, and yes, the numbers are very significant in hospitals, but the vaccines are still doing a really, really good job. So I think the booster really is the solution in terms of keeping people out of hospital. We've seen this in Israel, and importantly, we know that the booster works really, really quickly. If you get the booster, you have protection within a week or so. So if, for example, we could have this scenario where if we were to boost everybody overnight tonight, within 1 or 2 weeks, this would solve the problem. Obviously, that can't happen, but the booster is the solution to the problem.
Actually, Dara Loughlin, there is one other I want to throw to you, the Irish Pharmacy Union. A listener in Limerick says, in one local supermarket, an antigen test costs €7. In a local pharmacy, it costs 12. Listeners back from Germany are saying you can buy the antigen tests for under €3 each. Why is all that?
The antigen tests are subsidised, heavily subsidised by governments all across Europe. And in some countries, you can get them for as cheap as €1 or €2. And we know in the UK and one or two other countries, they were free. In terms of why it costs €10 in a pharmacy in Limerick, I couldn't say.
It shouldn't though, really, should it?
I think €10 seems expensive for a test, and on average, the tests seem to cost between €5 and €8 in most retail outlets, including pharmacies. And as I say, we are hoping that the government will introduce some kind of subsidy scheme, but they need to make decisions today in terms of how much they want to subsidise them by and who they want to make them available to.
Thank you very much, Dara Loughlin of the Irish Pharmacies Union. Paul Moynagh, Professor of Immunology at Maynooth University as well. A listener wants to know, do Paul say over 50s or over 60s can get the booster now? It's the over 50s, is my understanding of what he said.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.